Welcome to the Modstat Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy! I heard Biden was a loser. I mean, look, Joe never got more than 1%.
And now, your hosts.
Bethesda, Maryland.
Of course.
At the President's Hospital. It was National Naval Medical Center of Bethesda when I got there. But then the Army showed up within 6 to 8 weeks, and it was Walter Reed National Military Medical Center.
Renamancy. Well,
yes, exactly. Renamancy. And so we began talking, you know, doing just on the side, just talking about politics, the status quo, how great slash bad things were from day to day, depended upon the mood and what was going on. But on average, I figured it out. And again, this is a conservative guesstimate, that we talked and did analysis probably 5 hours every 7 to 8 days. And we're talking about 5 hours in totality.
Okay.
Sure, yep. Some weeks it was more or less, whatever. But taking leave and all that, but yeah. So 5 hours a week. Then add to it, you know, we've done 228 episodes before today. Mm-hmm. And early on, they averaged a lot longer. So we'll just say they were like 55 minutes apiece. That means, since you and I met, and that's not including the time since we left Walter Reed in 2013, or I left in 2013. So the time in between, we're not counting. But just Walter Reed and the Modern State Podcast, you and I have done political analysis, I shit you not, for 26.67 days, or, you know, almost a month.
That's an impressive catalog where anyone with deepfake AI could make us say anything, for sure.
And we probably have.
Probably. I haven't gotten any feedback yet.
Yeah, I mean, none of us has said anything too horrible, but, oh yeah, if somebody wanted to, you raise a good issue I hadn't even considered, but maybe it'll make for a hell of a birthday prank.
It could be. I mean, at least I have every single file. Like, if I really wanted to painstakingly prove that I said nothing that I'm thinking could be done, we'd be fine. But,
just saying. If you wanted to, though, you could have me hollering Hitler.
Same. It wouldn't take much. I don't think it is necessarily that you have to say every single word. It's that.
Just the syllables.
It's just the syllables, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, I mean, think about it. All right, so 228 episodes in. Again, 55-minute average, all right? Play along with me here. Let's just go ahead and say 240 hours, right?
Sure.
Okay, so, you know, you divide 24 hours into that. That's 10 whole days of us just sitting here doing the Mod State Podcast, recording what goes on the air. That's not precast, postcast, and us talking during the week. I mean, God, if you included text, we've written our own Britannica.
True.
I mean, so I was thinking back to this. You know, you remember a few episodes ago, God, it was probably dozens ago, but I was like, man, you don't know me like that. And you were like, I'm pretty sure I do know you like that.
It's true.
Well, it's very scary.
Oh my gosh, we are recording. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. This is the how many hours over the last 3 years have John and Nate talked podcast episode. I'm just kidding.
You just found out. Now you know.
Now you know. As always, thank you for tuning in. This is episode, I think, 228 or 229. Obviously, the days are flying by, and it's really not important. We're in the upper 220s. And as always, to our listeners, both international and domestic, home in the United States, we say thank you and continue to listen and support our podcast. We certainly appreciate it. As always, head over to modstate.com for more op-ed or opinion pieces. What do we have for you today? This is one of those things. I feel like we're in a... I don't know. It's almost like a holding pattern. Like we're trying to figure out what the hell's going to happen next. Right? The market's kind of like, we like what the Fed's doing. Maybe there's a vaccine. But man, there's a lot of COVID cases. Texas is bringing in freezer trucks for the bodies because the morgues are almost at capacity. Is school going to happen? We don't know. The White House says, hey, look, we can't let science keep us from opening the schools. And everyone else is going, you guys are insane. So that's kind of where we sit right now.
Is that an exact quote of the president?
That's not, no, that's McCainy.
Oh my God.
Yep. Yep. Let me find it here. I don't want to.
I'm sure it's there. I'm sure it's there. But, you know, as bizarre as some of the tirades could be, I honestly feel like it was maybe a better thing when the president was pontificating and holding court with the press himself.
Mm.
Okay. I know that political analysts will disagree, but I hearken back to the old ball coach, Lee Corso, who's still on game day on ESPN on Saturdays, if they ever do it again, where he'll put on the head of whatever mascot he thinks, you know, whichever team's going to win. Well, he had a saying, and I've quoted it to you, I paraphrased it to you a number of times, but he would say, look, stick with the girl you brought to the prom, and in this case, it's the running game, or whatever. I'm not saying that Trump needs to reinvent his act as far as change his rhetoric, because that's not going to happen.
No.
Happen, okay? But we've seen him run out to see them fail.
Yeah.
Sean Spicer hiding in the bushes.
I just don't understand what is it. We'll get to the polling and stuff like that because I think it's interesting. I think there's some stuff we can get into, but I guess what I don't understand, and I mean direct quote, like that was very much the sentiment. Like, listen, we can't let the CDC, the science, sort of get in the way, the fear associated with the science get in the way of opening our schools. To which the question is, that should be the only thing that's guiding whether or not we send millions of kids back to indoor settings sitting next to each other, not to mention the protection of the teachers.
Well, you do understand the idea, though, so you're going to keep paying teachers for doing nothing?
Listen, they're not doing nothing. They can certainly do it online. We can adapt, and I think we need to. It doesn't mean there's no school. It just means, hey, look, let's take a deep fucking breath here, let's not let the science get in the way of sending people back to school. That's the dumbest comment I've ever heard. No, the science should absolutely dictate whether or not it's safe to go back to indoor settings for 5 days a week, for 8 hours a day. Yes, the science should absolutely tell us whether or not it's safe or not. What you're saying is that we should disregard it.
I don't think we should disregard it. However, I mean, you do see the point, right, that, okay, university tenure aside, we're talking about, for instance, elementary school, middle school. How long are you going to pay people for not performing their function? For instance, one of our connects, and I do regret I didn't know we were going this route here. I would have shared this with you precast. But full disclosure, a former Republican Party employee at DC that's in our network that teaches public school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Okay. To close out the spring semester, the idea was, all right, we're going to get these elementary school students to then attend class and do their homework from home online. Would you like to take a guess at how many of his 30-plus students actually attended one day online? The answer is zero.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm not arguing against the science, but do you see the pragmatism here?
No, I understand the pragmatism. I mean, anything that we're doing right now to adapt to coronavirus is not, in some cases, pragmatic in terms of what we're doing. The fact that I waste a ton of time at work checking people in when I know that they don't have corona. I mean, there's a lot of things that aren't pragmatic. However, we have to, what you're asking, not you, but the proverbial you, is asking is like, okay, look, it's not pragmatic, so therefore we should put a ton of people at risk just because it's not pragmatic. Or we're not, how long could we possibly be paying teachers $40,000 a year to not function? I mean, it's not like we're paying out Jeff Bezos salaries in teachers' salaries. Like it's to me, I realize what you're saying. I hear what you're saying in terms of the pragmatic nature of it, but I think
never have a vaccine.
We don't then.
We may never go back to school.
No, I think what I personally,
I guess what I'm asking you is what is the metric?
So here's I don't think that there's necessarily metrics as much as there's
ICU. You're much more in the front lines of this than me, and I pay homage to that. I'm not at all discounting that. So no. I'm asking you what do you think here?
So here's what I think. I think that we're making a lot of assumptions about how what are benchmarks. Obviously there's two huge benchmarks we would like to get to, right? We want to get to a vaccine and ultimately herd immunity. We'd rather not get to herd immunity by people getting it and dying. And,
yeah, that's
a lot of fallout. Like what we would much rather do is have a vaccine that creates herd immunity. But let's pretend in a hypothetical world that doesn't happen. Or even if we do get it, we can't reach herd immunity because 40% of morons out there think it's going to give them autism. So, and that's my public service announcement. So let's pretend that's true. What we need to do is not rush because things aren't pragmatic. If we realize that it's not achievable, then we need to go back to the drawing board and create our new normal, not just take what was old normal and put it into the environment that is today. That's foolish. And so that comment by the press secretary is a foolish, stupid comment. It just is that we should just not let the science get in the way of sending millions of kids back to school.
Is that the actual quote?
Yeah, that's the quote. So that's my problem. That quote,
was a very poor choice of words.
That quote epitomizes the administration. And I mean that because it's not like Fauci's science is anti anything. It's just, it is what it is.
But I do see the point though, and I'm sure you can too, that to people that are suspicious of a quote deep state, people that have been in government for a long time, this is an individual, this is his sixth administration that he served under.
No, I get
it. So, I mean, I do see there being a certain amount of reticence because I'm going to tell you, I don't, for instance, trust people that operate within black money and the counterintelligence community and the CIA. That's not what he is.
No, but...
But you see what I'm getting at.
Here's the thing. If it was Obama, for example, Obama...
You brought up President Obama.
What's that?
You brought up President Obama.
Well, I'm just saying, pick a different president. I don't care. George Washington. I don't care. Just pick a different president. This specific president is continuing to, and in the process of vilifying a public servant of 40 years. This guy's record's like spotless. All he's been doing is...
That's the entire point.
So why is it...
That's the entire point.
So you're saying deep state, whatever, and maybe I misunderstood you, but it's just interesting that because things aren't going the way of the president of the United States, there's this subtle smear campaign of a public servant for 40 years, and there's going to be a portion of the society that eats that up. I think it's disingenuous of the president coming out like, well, look, no, I have a great relationship with Fauci. I haven't talked to him in like 6 weeks, but I have a great relationship with him. Nothing, we're not doing anything to smear him. But then there's that subtle like, let's not let Fauci science get in the way of putting all of our kids in danger to go back to school. So anyway, I know that's not the point of this. And look, I don't have the right answer for going back to school. I certainly don't. But what I do know is that there needs to be more thought than just like, look, man, September 1st is coming. Everyone's back in those desks. Teachers need to make money. And hold on. It's if this is what we're going to do, let's think it through a little bit more than just bring them on. Bring them on back. So
the problem you have here is the president can indisputably point back to the Speaker of the House saying in, what was it, January or February, I forget which month, saying that we needed to proceed with business as usual. And with Dr. Fauci's evolving response to this, and now to say, well, I'm glad we didn't use masks early on because we would have run out of supplies. Well, that's a different story, sir.
All right. But I realize it's like,
Well, my point to you is you do see that, right?
I do. But it's the part of being a good human being is to admit, like, hey, look, I probably could have pushed that earlier. It's admitting that we're and we're actually adapting to a current situation. So it's like, look, he misspoke. It's like, well, we didn't have any evidence that masks actually worked 4 months ago. Now we do. Now we're pushing it.
And I see that. What I mean is that does allow the president some leeway there, some latitude.
Maybe. Or the president could just wear a fucking mask and then everyone else would. I mean, it's we've still politicizing something. That's the point of this entire thing, that we can pick and choose and cherry pick. Like, hey, look, Fauci was, he was kind of wrong on this. He was kind of right on this. He was kind of wrong on this. Like, we can't really trust him. Can't really believe him. It's like, it just plays the political point that masks is an infringement on someone's freedom.
I mean, this whole thing's political, Nate. I mean, let's get real.
I realize that.
We're in favor of social distancing unless it's a protest we agree with.
I realize that. And I think I don't have much to say to that. I really don't. Other than the fact...
Well, I don't say it to be snarky.
No. I don't have a good response to that other than I would say, you know what, maybe a our cultural revolution is maybe more important slash a little less...
egregious.
Or I should say, not egregious, but it doesn't really care about what's going on. That cultural revolution, the response to something that's been brewing. Who knows when that shit's going to happen? Yeah, it just happened to happen. Is it more important than a haircut? Absolutely.
I'm simply trying to say, like, that's where the mentality can come from with the administration. It's not entirely, look, the administration's a bunch of dumbasses. I think they've got some points here.
But what they're doing,
really not.
It isn't about being a dumbass. I don't think that's the case. I think they're cherry picking to make a political point. And my point is that politics should stay out of the health of our nation.
No, you're right. It could be so argued.
And I guess my thing is, it's like, am I nuts? Like, is everything I'm saying like I'm a leftist liberal hack?
I didn't say that.
I know you're not saying that, but it's just crazy. It's like, wow. He must sound like he's a Democrat wanting to protect the health of the nation. What? No, it's just it is a real thing. It's super deadly. And I mean, to the point.
It was my children, if I had children that were of age to go to school, they weren't in college, that'd be their call then. But pre-college, they'd be being homeschooled. Rather than sending them back to school right now.
Sure.
That's my answer.
And of course, this is all the proverbial you, but I think it's just interesting
you're going to see a boom in homeschooling.
To the point where we are seeing major corporations saying, listen, cut the shit. You're all wearing masks. Walmart, Target, CVS, these like massive corporations, massive companies are stepping up and they're like, let's get this shit done with. Look, you want your freedom? Well, here's my freedom to not let you in the store without a mask on. Suck on it. And I think it's great.
Well, I think that's an entirely different issue.
I don't think it's an issue. Yeah, I don't think it's an issue at all.
A private enterprise has every right to say, yes, you can come in without a mask, or no, you will not come in without a mask.
And I think
that's entirely different than a federal policy on education.
I realize that. But what I mean is that I think we're at the point where you're even seeing major conservative donors like the Walmart family, the Wally family, they're not liberal, they're not Democrat, making the decision like, listen, enough of this shit. Everyone's wearing a mask. Let's get this done because it's the right thing to do.
Well, and I'm really on board with that.
Yeah,
I'm a centrist. If you want to call me something, you can call me a Nixon Rock fellow Republican. And I'm saying, folks, where you can stay 6 feet apart and by all means around people you don't live with, especially wear a mask. I'm on board with that.
Yeah,
I don't mean to discount that. I know you're not saying this, but it's not simply as easy as, look, there's a bunch of jackassery coming out of Washington or the administration, rather. The press secretary, that was a very, very poor choice of words. And she's not hard on the eyes, but I wouldn't say she's good at her job either.
Look, it's why my question to the administration or to her is why are you in the situation where you have to come up with absurd comment? Like, why are we having this conversation? That why are we having the conversation about you saying something as stupid as let's not let the science get in the way of sending our kids back to school? You don't have to do that. The administration does not need, in fact, the administration would have more support broadly in the United States if the comment literally was, oh, look, we're looking at all options online, in person. We just want to protect the safety of all of our kids, not just like, send them back. I mean, that's the message. So anyway, we're getting way off topic. I think what's interesting, what we were also going to talk about was what we were going to talk about. I was reading a number of things that I thought that I guess it's probably validated a bit of what I feel about the upcoming election. And that is, I mean, so I go to realclearpolitics.com, which I realize a lot of people don't like, but what it is, it's an aggregate of the 2020 national presidential election polls.
Well, sure. It's owned by News Corporation, which owns Fox News. But like you said, it's an aggregate. They have they have Monmouth, mm-hmm. UCLA, they have everybody's polls.
Rasmussen, Quinnipiac, Economist, YouGov, NBC.
Exactly.
So anyway, and I open up this page and broadly from the top to the bottom spread Biden 10 plus 10, Biden plus 10, plus 11, plus 3, plus 15, plus 9, plus 4. I mean, it's very clear results. 51, 40 Trump, 50, or excuse me, 51 Biden, 40 Trump, 51 Biden to 47 Biden, Trump 44 down the line. I think the closest one is maybe the Hill-Harris poll on the July 8th that showed Biden 43, Trump 39, but there is not one in here that shows Trump and favorability. So I guess this comes into, and I'll put this in the show notes, but honestly quite, I always say that and then I don't, because you can just Google it. Just Google it. You'll find it. work hard, folks. There was an article that was written on CNN, and if I do find this one again, I will put it in the show notes. However, it's an article that's talking about, even though all these polls do show Biden beating Trump, there's a lot of voters. I think it was like something like 67% of Biden supporters felt like there was this secret Trump, like, electoral base somewhere, and that they were the silent majority that were somehow going to come out of the woodworks like they did in 2016. And the thing is there's nothing out there that shows that. And I realize, I think people are having almost a 2016 PTSD.
That's kind of the point.
And it could be. And I obviously I feel it, because I'm like, man, I just feel like 2020 November, this just force of independence or whatever it is comes out of the woodwork and they're like, yep, we really like what's going on here, and vote them back in. But there's no evidence for it. And so I'm trying to find some validity to that feeling. And I think the article at least, you know, made me feel like I'm not nuts in thinking
You're not nuts, Nate. There's a few things to remember here. National polling is largely to be discounted. Sure, it might be a good metric for whether the country likes peanuts versus cashews, but remember, at this point in the electoral cycle, Dewey was beating Truman. Okay, at this point in the electoral cycle, you know, Hillary Clinton was vastly trouncing Donald Trump. Okay, and at this point in the electoral cycle, Joe Biden is underperforming where Hillary Clinton was versus Trump amongst Hispanics, amongst African Americans, and since the pandemic, with all the alleged gifts that the current administration's leadership, or lack thereof, depending upon who you ask, has supposedly handed former Vice President Joe Biden, he's only gained 1 percentage point amongst non-college-educated white voters. I mean, my God, what else needs to be handed to him for momentum here? It's too far out at this point for one thing. And I know you're not going to want to hear this, but defund the police is a gift to the administration. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have 70 plus percent of voters that have said at the very least that they want police funding levels to remain the same. Not that they don't want police reform. Not that they don't want community policing to be different. But that they don't want the funding levels drastically cut or to remain the same.
Well, and
that is going to be a gift.
It's true, but at least I think Biden came out very quickly after all that happened and said, look, I'm not for defunding the police. And I think that was a smart move.
That's smart, but who is he beholden to, Nate?
I isolate the crap
that you're peril here, Joe.
I hear you. I just feel like the hatred for Donald Trump overrides the dislike of Biden. I do feel strongly about that, as much as I don't feel strongly about this, not feeling so sure that there isn't this secret silent Trump base somewhere.
You could be 100% correct, okay, but the polling still does not extend out of urban centers, and you and I might have read the same article, but the metrics have only increased. They've only increased in these fast polls. 33% of the polls in 2016 included non-college educated white voters. Today, 40% is the metric. There's still not a drastic, not everybody, the Twitter sphere, President Obama put it best, Twitter is not indicative of the greater American electorate. Who knows?
But that's maybe my thing, though, is what we're saying here is that
the media wants Trump to lose.
Does
that translate into a Trump defeat? That's the question.
I realize that, but are you insinuating, and I don't mean this in a bad way, insinuating almost as if all of these polls are the Twitter sphere? Because if that's the case, then how is it that Trump is even retaining 40% or within margins, like just small margins of Biden? Because if it was the Twitter sphere, it'd be like 100% Biden approval.
But, and that's relevant. That's relevant. But I guess what I'm getting at is going out in New Orleans and Houston and Atlanta and Miami and Detroit and even Oklahoma City, much less San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, that does not represent the broad spectrum of the American electorate. Again, maybe the polls are right. Okay. All I'm getting at is this is awfully eerily reminiscent.
Yeah. And look, I think the PTSD is real. And this is from that NBC News article. I will save this and put this in the show notes. This one I will, folks, just for you. This was July 15th.
Yeah, that was funny.
But the survey also finds silver linings for Trump and the GOP, as well as warning signs for Biden and Democrats. A majority of voters approve of the president's handling of the economy. Biden's personal ratings have dropped since last month, and Democrats no longer hold a double-digit lead in congressional preference. As Americans are coping with the coronavirus and reckoning on race, politically, there's a great deal of sorting going on, said Democratic pollster Jeff. You don't care. You can read it later, folks. We are a long way away from knowing how this will play out with voters. So further on, it says, in his matchup against Trump, Biden's biggest advantage are with African-American voters, 80% to 6%, Latinos, 67 to 22%, voters ages 18 to 34, 62% to 23%, women, 58% to 35%, and white voters with college degrees, 53% to 38%. Trump is ahead among all white voters, 49% to 42%. Men, 45 to 43%, and whites without college degrees, 57 to 35%. Yeah, well, and that just validates, of course, obviously, what you said before. So
it does bring up the last tenet of what I texted you precast earlier today. And that is the American people, when they enter the booth, and that's where the phrase ghost polling comes from.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks out on the street, I mean, it's anecdotal, but I just agnostically ask folks, because they know I'm a centrist, I have no dog in this, but I ask, okay, forget your feelings about his rhetoric, whatever he says, the cringeworthy moments, you know, it's like watching The Office almost. What do you think?
So,
you get into that voting booth, and it's going to come down to, am I better off than where I was 4 years ago? Sure, the economy has struggled since the since the pandemic hit. But which candidate is more likely to say the lockdown, your small business, should continue to be hamstrung? That's going to play a factor. I could be completely wrong, and it's a wash, and it's a massive landslide for Joe Biden. I'm just looking at the tea leaves going, I wouldn't be so hot skinned to Trotsky.
I hear you. I hear you, because I think I completely understand that idea of getting in the booth and then going, listen, I think ultimately what we're doing here is we're taking, hold on. I'm not articulating. I need to think my thought through here. And that is, it's this kind of, so with your heart, who are you going to vote for? You're like, well, you know, I was for Biden and now I'm in here and I just, like, life was pretty good.
No. That's not it. Who wants to stand in a room in front of 24 of their peers, 30 people, or okay, hell, 15 people, and actually utter out loud, hell yeah, I'm voting for Donald Trump? Many folks.
That guy right there, for sure.
Yeah, that's what ghost polling is.
Yeah, I guess I see that. I think the messaging that Biden has to have is, look, I am just not as bad of a person as Donald Trump. I mean, that's all he has to do. Is he's like, listen, I am a middle of the road Democrat. I can go to the left. I can go to the right. I'm here to just make sure. I'm here to make sure that your small business stays afloat. We'll bring it all back. Like, it's not as if you're going into the voting booth as a small business owner thinking, oh my God, it's Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders. How the hell? Like, I could see in that point, at that point in time, you would think, you know what? Like, business is pretty good. I don't like his rhetoric. I'm just going to stick with him because I know I'm going to get a little bit of the same over the next 4 years. With Biden, you're just getting, it's kind of boring, right?
I don't know. At least with Bernie Sanders, I would know what I'm getting. I don't know which Joe Biden I'm going to get. And I'm not talking about his mental status. I'm talking about who is he beholden to at this point. I mean, this is not the same centrist Joe that crossed the aisle in the past. But I see what you're driving at. I mean, the mantra basically is the Doors song, Roadhouse Blues, right?
Yeah.
Joe Biden is keep your eyes on the road and your hand on the wheel. That's what his candidacy is?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
keep it on the road.
I give voters a lot of credit, and then I take it away at the same time, and I'm not very fair in that regard. In this case, we're talking about, you know, the average voter going into the voting booth going, like, I wonder what centrist Joe we're going to get. Are we going to get which? Who is he beholden to?
Right.
Like, it's like,
no, you're right.
You know, I just don't, and that's where you I don't give voters enough credit. Whereas I say, like, listen, I give them credit. When I say that I think their hatred for Trump overrides their dislike for Joe Biden. But again, that's not like you don't need to be a rocket scientist to like make that come to that conclusion either. So
you're right. I mean, I overanalyze things. You know that. I mean, I guess. All right. Do you feel that the debates matter more this go round than they did in the past?
I think Joe Biden should welcome the debates. I absolutely.
Whoa.
I know you say that.
You think he's going to know what state he's in?
I think that there's enough dumb shit that the president has said that it wouldn't take a lot. You could literally let the president of the United States take the floor for 45 minutes. And I think people will tune in, not this time out of curiosity to see what the president will say, but sort of, how bad is it going to look? Because it's been 4 years since the president has been on a stage with another professional politician. And 4 years ago, it was just the hilarity of the entire thing. Today, it's
a
little different.
Hillary Clinton is a far more skilled. She's far more skilled at elaborating the constructs of a plan.
I realize that. I don't think Biden needs to talk about a plan. He just needs to stand up there and be like, you're insane. you're insane. You're an insane person. Are you listening to yourself right now? You can't even talk in, you cannot even put together a sentence at like a 10th grade high school level.
So I'm not trying to be contrarian here, but I got to ask you, what happens? And I don't know what the three debates are going to be. Maybe I should have done my homework. Maybe they haven't even said what they're going to be yet. What happens when he comes out in Syracuse, New York, and says, man, it's great to be in the great state of Michigan tonight?
I don't know.
And I'm talking about Joe Biden here.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope that that doesn't happen. However,
do you think that's going to weigh at all? Or is it just going to be a Twitter hashtag worthy moment that everyone, I mean, I'm asking. And is it going to be, or is it going to be a moment, you know, that people just move beyond, like, oh, that was funny.
I think there's one side that's going to pick up on it and be like, the guy's got dementia. Like, it's over. He's got Alzheimer's. Or it's like, Joe didn't realize that they were in New York, or a slip of the tongue, like whatever.
It's going to be the slow motion fight in Family Guy between Herbert Pervert and the neo-Nazis.
Yes. You know, again, like, that's asking me, like, well, what happens if Biden walks in and slips and falls? Like, I have no idea. Like, yeah, I don't. And that doesn't, like, I'm not afraid that Biden's going to say, like, welcome New York, like, or hello Michigan when he's in New York. Like, that's not a reason for me to not have the debates. I mean, if the polls remain the same over the next, after the conventions, we'll obviously see where the polls land after the Democrat and GOP convention. If the margins tighten, it may be worth it. But if they remain the same, then maybe they will tighten. What's that?
They will tighten. I mean, you know, they will. They did with Trump and Clinton. And sure. Let's not forget the cases in which we did not send the incumbent back to Washington. No, okay. Carter, Bush, HW. I mean, it's not very often that Americans don't send the incumbent back. Hey, you could be completely right here. I don't know.
The other thing too is there's been no incumbent like the incumbent President Donald Trump.
That much is true. I mean, you could point and laugh at me at the end of course, I haven't issued my prediction. You did, but you wish you can change at any time, but you might point at me and say, hey, dude, you cast your lightning in a bottle 4 years ago. You got it wrong this time. I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
I think
we know this guy may not even be on the ballot.
He may not be. I mean, that's, what did we say? That was still one of my predictions is that he does not even wind up he pulls the plug.
He pulls a Lyndon Johnson.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, that could happen. He could drop Pence. Anything could happen here. I mean, I don't know. I think, frankly, it's more likely that he drops Pence than he doesn't run. But we are talking about Donald Trump here.
I guess my question is, who does he replace? Like, who's going to fire up? Like, there's 30% of Americans out there that literally he could shoot someone in the head in front of them. They're like, God told him to, and abortion's bad. I love the president. All right, so there's that group. And then so who does the president pick? Right? That's the diehard. That's it. That's the evangelical diehard. I mean, that's it.
Nate, don't mince words. Please don't mince words. Tell me how you really feel about the president's base.
I did the perfect caricature. Look. I could put in the show notes a group of Dallas socialites, aristocrats, doing mental gymnastics as about how the president is a religious man. That's the base.
You know what you should do? You should just link to Florida Man.
Oh God.
That's all. You know, but no, in answer to your query, as much as I hate to give a cliched answer here, the reality is the response, unless you're willing to take the risk of replacing this seat in Florida and picking Marco, the cliched answer that I would say here is Nikki Haley, simply because she could help shore up the president's losses amongst suburban white women. But in reality, I don't know that there is much traction to him to gain beyond that.
I feel like he needs to do it quickly because I have a hard time. Again, it's like not giving suburban white women enough credit, where it's like all of a sudden we just throw Nikki Haley, sprinkle a little Nikki Haley on the Trump presidency. And
we're talking about maybe 1 or 2 points here.
That's true. The thing is, does Nikki Haley take that bait? I mean, she's been watching this dumpster fire over the last, since 2020. Like, you know what? I'm good. I'll just wait for Mitt Romney and then solicit that. Like, I'll just
Mitt Romney.
I'm telling you, man, 2024.
No, you're probably right. I mean, my thing is this. Look, you're right in one sense that if he's going to make a move like that, it should be yesterday. Probably not going to do it. I mean, I'm saying that's more likely than him dropping out, but probably not going to happen regardless. But I just come back to the fact that anybody that claims to be a, quote, evangelical Catholic, I don't know how I feel about that.
Hmm.
You know, I just so, and calls their wife mother, and everybody around him has to call her mother.
Dude, that's weird. He's weird. He's a creepy dude.
You're on a weird date.
Yeah. Which is a perfect segue in the last several minutes that we have in this episode. One thing we did want to push out.
We're talking about weird dates.
Not weird dates. Religion.
We should sometime.
Weird dates. I can't tell you that I've had too many weird dates.
Dude, you know me.
Oh, I know you have.
Remember our time in Bethesda?
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about the night I accidentally got a girl fired from Ultra Bar.
Yeah, look, you've got your fair share of those. I guess maybe I've had weird experiences, but not necessarily weird dates. But
well, see what, folks, we'll save it for the book, or I'll save it for the book.
There you go, perfect.
You didn't have anything to do with that.
Yeah. No, I think we have an interesting, I would say almost, I would say a mini series, if you will. And I don't know if it's going to go back to back to back. I think we did something similar. We've tried to do things similar to this. However, there's one topic that you and I have not, and I don't want to say go head to head at, because that wouldn't be the point of this.
That we've talked about a lot privately.
We have talked about it at length privately, and I believe that we have a lot more that we agree about, quite frankly. And the one thing that I don't see much about is the topic of religion, and namely Christianity in America. And there's a number of things, obviously, where I stand, where you stand, and having that conversation, I don't know that a lot of atheists, Catholics, or any of the other Christian denominations have a lot of. I mean, there's plenty of folks that have friendships, but talk at length the way we do and respect one another's opinions. So I think hey, let's go big or go home. First podcast episode ever, the Mod State podcast, was about abortion. Like two white guys talking about abortion. And it just is like, what could we talk about that's like super controversial? We both clearly have a position on it. And you know, here we are almost 230 episodes later and close to 26 days worth of talking. And we haven't really gone back and discussed religion and what religion means to the fabric of America. We talk about evangelical base. We talk about, just recently, I think I got pretty fired up and rightfully so, you got fired up too, as well, with the fact that major huge churches, got loans from the federal government, like taxpayer loans, and they don't actually pay taxes. They're tax exempt. So, and there's a lot of discussion about, hey, churches need to be taxed. And I think there's a good argument on both sides to be made that they shouldn't be, and that they should be. So I think that what we want to do over the next couple episodes, or at least throughout the summer, is have a couple discussions about what religion means to us, and how, what it means to the, you know, our community and our fabric and society, and how can we possibly bridge religion which is not going away. It's certainly not retaining followers. That's their retention rate's a little rougher, and their recruiting rate's a little rougher, unless the Mormon church is doing pretty well right now. How do we bring the politics that is so entrenched in religion? I don't want to say bring that more secular, but at least find some common ground Or you know, that'd be my side of it. Like, how can we take these really radical ideas within the Christian religion and sort of soften it? Maybe. I mean, maybe you should Christianity should do a little rebranding. However, I think that there's quite a bit of quite a bit that I dare I say believe in or believe about religion that I think there's a lot that you agree with me about, and we just have not done a good job of or give it in any justice, because I think there's both sides of that mean a lot to us and are a part of us. So I just wanted to prep that. If I don't know if you have anything else to add on that matter.
No, I think you summarized it fairly well, and I think it's something that is quite relevant as we talked about texting earlier today. It's well within our quote scope of practice. We are immune to cancel culture because from day one we're kind of like South Park in the sense that if you get offended by what we're talking about, well, you just missed the point of the whole show. We're the adults in the room, as you put it. But something you said, it really kind of stuck out to me, and it's like, does Christianity need a rebrand? And I think that's in and of itself, and this isn't picking on you, you hit on something there. That's the entire problem, that Christianity has tried, that Christians have tried to act like they're a part of any other major monolith in society, when by nature, we're not supposed to be. The whole point is, we've rebranded. That's just it. You go to churches and you see what? You see pyrotechnics and a rock concert. That's not what the faith is about. And we go back to what Gandhi said, and I'm sure fans of the show are like, oh my God, this Gandhi quote again. But the song remains the same with, I love your Christ, but I despise your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ. Mm-hmm. I would challenge our listeners and our readers, please comment to me if you can find. I bet a whole lot you can't. Find for me how much Christ had to say about homosexuality in the New Testament. Find for me where the marriage rites, R-I-T-E-S, are listed in the Bible. They're not. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
No, and I say that to say, we don't need a rebrand. We need to get back to what we were originally about. You know, Christ didn't say, hey, let the cool people and the rich people come around. No. He dined with tax collectors and prostitutes and said, no, let the children come to me.
Yeah. And look, I'm really, really, really looking forward to it. And I think one reason we've shied away from it is because we've always said, like, this isn't a religious podcast. And I realize that, but I think it is so fun.
But that's part of our fabric of who we are as a country and society.
100%. And that's why I think, like, listen, I think we should open Pandora's box, have the conversations, have the, you know, anywhere from the morality piece to the like the questions I have about it. And anyway, I'm glad that we're teasing it. What I would like is if there's any listeners out there that feel one way or another, or have questions or have comments about their religiosity or their lack of, like, just send it modstate@modstate.com, go to Podomatic, leave reviews on iTunes, wherever you're listening. And I'd like to make this as inclusive as possible, because I think it's a huge...
That's the point. That's the point, because we're talking about a country that was largely... It came about because of Western Europe, the original point outside of Israel of Christendom, okay? And America, 70% of our country still claims to be Christians. This isn't about turning this into a religious podcast. The fact is, you can try as much as you want to excise Christianity from American politics. You can't succeed there any more than you can by excising Islam or Judaism. Mm-hmm. It is a fact of who we are. We have a lot of people that vote. That's why this is relevant. They vote that way, and they want to formulate policy based upon that. So go ahead and say you want to ignore it and not discuss it. Fine, that's at your peril. You're missing a massive element of the discourse. This is the only place, not one of the only places, this is the only place that you will find a professed atheist and a practicing Roman Catholic who can have this kind of conversation, listen to one another, pursue it. And we're not about to dedicate entire episodes to Well, this is what the Book of Judges says. Well, I don't agree with that. You know, that's not what we're about to do. We're talking about dedicating a certain segment of multiple episodes in a row. Probably, I would wager, I mean, it's up to you, but at the conclusion, the last 15 minutes or so, you know, or we may pair them together in groups, who knows? But the point is, fine. I agree with the separation of church and state. Marriage, for instance, as I alluded to earlier, is an institution of the state for census and taxation purposes. All right? But again, it is part of the fabric of how people vote and how they want us to be governed. So I think it's pretty relevant.
Yep, indeed. Well, I'm looking forward to it, my friend. And we're at 50 minutes. And as always, it's an honor and privilege to do this with you week in and week out. And for all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Please go ahead, spread the podcast, promote it. We certainly appreciate the uptick in listenership. And again, send us over your comments at modstate@modstate.com. And wherever you're listening to the podcast, there's probably a place to comment. So do that there. So, well, as always, my friend, until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.